switch to AM and LSB to avoid a weak carrier on the high side. And there was normal modulation and a good S4 level with Peruvian music. And announcers speaking Quechua, frequent time hacks. Harold Sellers and B.
You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Rachel Shulman. Campa Hudson is hosting a monthly community dinner on Tuesday, February 6th at 5:30 in our Solaris building, 360 Warren Street. Come experience community, meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal made by a local volunteer. Everyone is invited. No one will be turned away. We will be glad to see you there. Please bring a friend.
Hello, WGXC listeners. This is Matthew Winnie Harrington, assistant member of WGXC Radio Group. Camp Hill Hudson is hosting monthly community dinner on Tuesday, February 6th at 5:30 p.m. in Solaris Building, 360 Warren Street. Come experience community, meet new people and old friends over a freshly prepared meal made by local volunteers. Everyone is invited and no one will come turn away. We will be glad to see you there. Please bring a friend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York in New York, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Food New York.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Roger Justin reports for the Times Union that New York may close up to 5 correctional facilities soon in a cost-cutting measure. Great Meadow Correctional Facility, a maximum security prison in Washington County that can hold up to 1,611 inmates, is being considered for closure. In her budget proposal, Governor Kathy Hochul says that leaders of the state Senate and Assembly must be notified at least 90 days before any planned prison closures. State lawmakers must also be told how many inmates and staff are in each facility that may be shuttered. The state's prison population has been declining for years, down to 48,000 people in New York State and local correctional facilities, according to a report from the Advocacy Research Center Prison Policy Initiative. 6 prisons were closed in 2022, including the maximum security downstate correctional facility in Dutchess County. That saved taxpayers $142 million. State Senator Jake Ashby, a Rensselaer County Republican whose district also includes portions of Washington County, said, and I quote, "Forcing convicts into fewer and fewer facilities without investing in needed staffing has made our state prisons more violent and dangerous for inmates and the dedicated correction officers on the front lines of public safety." That's the legacy of the former Governor Andrew M. Cuomo administration's total misguided closures. It's one I'm urging Governor Hochul to reverse, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Zachary Basu reports for Axios that former President Donald Trump is considering picking Representative Elise Stefanik to be his vice presidential candidate. Stefanik is, and I quote, a top pick, end quote, according to former Trump chief strategist Steve Bannon. Stefanik was the first member of Congress to endorse Trump and will campaign with the former president in New Hampshire this weekend before the state's January 23rd primary. Trump reportedly told allies in December, and I quote, she's a killer, end quote, after Stefanik's confrontation with university presidents at a hearing on campus anti-Semitism. Stefanik would not comment on the vice presidential possibility and said, and I quote, I'm not going to get into any of my conversations with President Trump. I'm honored to call him a friend. I'm proud to be the first member of Congress to have endorsed his reelection, and he had a huge win in Iowa. So we're very excited about that, end quote. Read more about this story in Axios. Andrea Makel reports in Porcupine Soup that the so-called Fountain House in the middle of the town of Cairo is under contract from an unidentified buyer. The property, a 6,300-square-foot structure at 576 Main Street, was condemned by the town recently. Grist Mill Real Estate listed the property at $109,900. In 2022, the building was deemed, and I quote, unfit for human occupancy, end quote, and has been empty ever since. The building is a few feet from the Soldiers' Fountain that was put there in 1922 with a bronze memorial tablet and the names of 44 World War I veterans. The building dates back to between 1794 and 1800, making it one of the oldest in Cairo. The building has served as a post office, hotel, and a stagecoach stop on the Susquehanna Turnpike and was called Dexter's Dance Hall in the middle 1800s. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Israel charged with genocide in Gaza. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. In 1948, the newly formed United Nations marked the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as well as the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. The Genocide Convention was a response to World War II's Holocaust, when 6 million European Jews were murdered by Nazi Germany. Raphael Lemkin, a Polish lawyer of Jewish descent, coined the term genocide during the war as he developed legal arguments for prosecuting war criminals leading to the Nuremberg trials. 1948 was also the year Israel was founded. While many celebrated Israel as a safe refuge for the world's Jews after the Holocaust, Palestinians called that period the Nakba, Arabic for catastrophe. Over 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes and villages, their property confiscated, and 15,000 were killed. 1948 was also when the white minority in South Africa imposed apartheid on the black majority, creating an oppressive system of segregation that lasted close to half a century. In the intervening 75 years, despite the Genocide Convention, genocides have still occurred, and too few perpetrators of genocide have faced prosecution. Last week, the eyes of the world were on The Hague, as South Africa brought a case accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza to the International Court of Justice. The ICJ, also referred to as the World Court, convened on January 11th, first hearing South Africa's case, followed the next day by Israel's defense. South African lawyer Adila Hassim opened, saying,
"For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea. They are also at immediate risk of death by starvation, dehydration, and disease as a result of the ongoing siege by Israel, the destruction of Palestinian towns, the insufficient aid being allowed through to the Palestinian population, and the impossibility of distributing this limited aid while bombs fall. This conduct renders essentials to life unobtainable."
Another of South Africa's legal team, Irish lawyer Blini Nigrale, said,
"On average, 247 Palestinians are being killed and are at risk of being killed each day, many of them literally blown to pieces. They include 48 mothers each day, two every hour, and over 117 children each day, leading UNICEF to call Israel's actions a war on children. Entire multi-generational families will be obliterated, and yet more Palestinian children will become WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family, the terrible new acronym born out of Israel's genocidal assault on the Palestinian population in Gaza."
Israel said its attack on Gaza was in self-defense, directed at Hamas's military infrastructure, following its October 7th attack on Israel, in which over 1,000 people were killed and over 200 taken hostage. Renowned Jewish Israeli journalist Gideon Levy said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
"Does this give us Israelis the right to do anything we want after the 7th, forever, without any limits, no legal limits, no moral limits? We can just go and kill and destroy and destruct as much as we wish? That's the main question right now."
Gideon Levy serves on the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. He recently wrote a column headlined, "If it isn't a genocide in Gaza, then what is it?" In it, Levy writes, "Let us assume that Israel's position at The Hague is right and just, and Israel committed no genocide or anything close to it. So what is this? What do you call the mass killing, which continues even as these lines are being written without discrimination, without restraint, on a scale that is difficult to imagine?" Levy asked. Any measures ordered by the ICJ would have to be adopted by the United Nations Security Council, where the United States, Israel's staunchest ally and weapons provider, regularly wields its veto to protect Israel. The United States is quick to accuse others of genocide, from Serbia in the 90s to Burma in the last decade for its atrocities against its Rohingya minority, to the mass imprisonment of Uyghurs in China, to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The United States even acknowledged Turkey's 1915 genocide against Armenians, albeit in 2021, more than 100 years late. Yet President Biden, in a statement marking the 100th day anniversary of Hamas's attack on Israel, failed to even mention the more than 24,000 Palestinians killed by Israel in Gaza, 70% of whom were women and children. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Davos, Switzerland, said the situation is gut-wrenching and asked, "But what can be done?" If President Biden demanded an end to the bombardment of Gaza, it would stop. Now is the time to heed the global calls for a ceasefire in Gaza. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Luke Parsno reports at New York State of Politics that Representative Elise Stefanik told the other Republicans running for president to drop out of the race after her man, former President Donald Trump, trounced all comers in the Iowa primary on January 15th. Trump took 51% of the votes in Iowa, followed by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis with 21%. Former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley with just above 19%, and Ohio entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy at just under 8%. Stefanik said, and I quote, "As I have said for over a year, President Trump will be our Republican nominee and will defeat Joe Biden in November. I am calling on every other candidate, all of whom have no chance to win, to drop out so we can unify and immediately rally behind President Trump so that we can focus 100% of our resources on defeating Joe Biden to save America," end quote. Stefanik represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District and is the chair of the House GOP Conference, the third highest ranking Republican in Congress. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. CBS News reports that the U.S. Senate passed a continuing resolution 68-13 on January 16th, with Democrats leading efforts to avoid a government shutdown. The House, led by Republicans, has not made as much progress on passing continuing resolutions extending government funding deadlines to March 1st and March 8th to give both chambers time to approve long-term funding. The U.S. government will run out of money at the end of the week. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, the leading Democrat, said they want funds for Ukraine and Israel to fight wars, while House Speaker Mike Johnson spoke about funding for border security.
At stake is the security of our country, the survival of our friends in Ukraine, the safety of our friends in Israel, and nothing less than the future of Western democracy.
We understand that all these things are important, but we must insist that the border be the top priority. I think we have some consensus around that table. Everyone understands the urgency of that, and we're going to continue to press for it.
Read more about this story at CBS News. Luke Parsno reports in New York State of Politics that Representative Mark Molinaro raised $447,701 in the fourth quarter of 2023 for nearly $2.2 million throughout the year for the Republican reelection campaign, his office said on January 18th. So far, Democrat Josh Riley, who lost to Molinaro in 2022, and Democrat Dan Butterman are also running for the 19th congressional district seat. Riley, a former congressional aide and law clerk for the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, lost by 2 points to Molinaro and is behind in fundraising this year. Riley said recently he had raised $696,556 in the fourth quarter of 2023 and has more than $1.45 million in cash on hand. Republicans took control of the House of Representatives in 2022 by flipping several seats, including the 19th congressional district. The New York elections are again expected to tilt control of the House to the winners. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Zachary Basu reports for Axios that former President Donald Trump is considering picking Representative Elise Stefanik to be his vice presidential candidate. Stefanik is, and I quote, a top pick, end quote, according to former Trump chief strategist Steve Bannon. Stefanik was the first member of Congress to endorse Trump and will campaign with the former president in New Hampshire this weekend before the state's January 23rd primary. Trump reportedly told allies in December, and I quote, "She's a killer," end quote, after Stefanik's confrontation with university presidents at a hearing on campus anti-Semitism. Stefanik would not comment on the vice presidential possibility and said, and I quote, "I'm not going to get into any of my conversations with President Trump. I'm honored to call him a friend. I'm proud to be the first member of Congress to have endorsed his reelection, and he had a huge win in Iowa. so we're very excited about that, end quote. Read more about this story in Axios.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
On Thursday, January 18th, state lawmakers and advocates held a news conference calling for adoption of the State Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. The bill will reduce plastic 12 years to dramatically reduce waste, improve recyclability of packaging, and slash greenhouse gas emissions associated with plastic, which are on track to outpace the emissions from coal by 2030. It would also put a modest fee on packaging paid for by packaging producers. The City of New York has officially backed the bill, and more than 200 organizations and businesses signed a recent memo of support. In part one of our coverage, we hear from Vanessa Vahan Turner, Executive Director of Environmental Advocates New York, who served as a moderator. We then hear from the lead sponsors of the bill, the chair of the respective legislative committees on the environment, Assemblymember Deborah Glimp and Senator Peter Harkin. We then hear from New York City Councilmember Sandy Nurse, who until recently was chair of the Council's Committee on Sanitation, and Blair Horner, Executive Director, NYPERG.
Can't recycle our way out of this problem that we see growing around us every day, because only 6% of plastic actually gets recycled. That means 94% of the plastic we think we're recycling actually ends up in landfills across New York and New Jersey and beyond. The only way forward is to reduce how much plastic we use. That's why we're here today, and that's why we're so grateful to our bill sponsors and thought leaders with us. I'll now hand it over to our bill sponsor and Assembly Environmental Committee Chair, Assemblywoman Deborah Glick.
It is vital that we make this a priority this session. This bill appropriately shifts some of the burden to manufacturers, but does so in a way that seeks to incentivize them making changes so that over time, it costs them less if they reduce their waste. Anybody who thinks about it for 2 seconds realizes that we have an enormous amount of excess packaging. Much of it has become plastic because plastic is lighter than some other materials, but much harder to get rid of than other materials. So this is a way of encouraging the manufacturers to reduce their packaging, thereby saving on the fee that they will be charged. But it is about fairness and making certain that it doesn't fall only to the taxpayers through our municipalities to dispose of this excess packaging. If anything, the pandemic demonstrated that people's behavior has changed and they more than ever are seeking to have things delivered directly to them, which only adds to the additional packaging that we're seeing and that we have to dispose of. It makes all the sense in the world to also require more recycled material in the packaging so that we have a market for those materials that can be recycled, cardboard and the like. But it's going to require a change, a change in our behavior, a change in the way in which manufacturers do business. In so many instances, their packaging is part of their marketing. And so they're going to also have to redesign their packaging. They're going to have to rethink their the way in which they use that packaging for marketing. But we don't have a choice. We see one community after another having landfills that are polluting their communities, that are impossible to close because we have more and more waste. The only thing we can do is to reduce the waste at its source, use more recyclable materials in that packaging, and to get rid of the plastic that is becoming not just microplastics, which were terrifying enough, but now nanoplastics, which are causing health and safety issues for not just wildlife, which we were aware of before, but now also human health. And those chemicals are changing our body chemistry in a way that is very concerning for future generations. So it is up to us to take a stand today and make certain that we make the changes that are crucial to ensure that we have a livable planet. Thank you.
Bill sponsor and Senate Environmental Committee Chair, Senator Pete Harcum.
So this legislation is absolutely necessary, and it just does four simple things. It reduces packaging so that we reduce what's going to our landfills and our waste incinerators. It will improve recycling and recycling infrastructure. It will financially support municipal recycling programs, and as was mentioned, will reduce toxins in packaging. It is just so essential that we get moving on this. Four other states that have this, they do this in Europe. This doesn't cause the sky to fall. And as Deborah mentioned, this will actually, in the long run, reduce the cost to manufacturers and packaging producers because they'll have to produce less packaging. But this is about our environment. This is about our public health. This is about our natural resources, the amount mineral and raw material extraction that goes into the amount of packaging. So there are a lot of benefits. And ultimately, this will save New York taxpayers over $450 million annually. $250 million in New York City, $200 million in the rest of the state. And that's just for starters. So this is a win-win for taxpayers. It's a win-win for public health. It's a win-win for the environment. And it's been a long time in coming, and we are committed to really working hard and making this our number one priority to get through this year.
I'm very happy now and very excited to meet New York City Council Sanitation Committee Chair Sandy Nurse.
So in 2022, the council passed a resolution in support of this act. And in 2023, the New York City Council passed the pretty transformative Zero Waste Act that set diversion targets by 2030, mandated citywide curbside organics, and increased community access. You know, the city really did its part to set us on a path towards zero waste, but we understand this is an incredibly ambitious framework that requires action at all levels of government, really to catalyze more circular economies and tackle waste from production to disposal. This is also a major economic issue for our city. While New York City faces major budget cuts, we're still being forced to spend nearly $500 million to export our garbage, much of which is still made up of single-use plastic. And then beyond the financial cost, there really is a human toll here, and it is a racial justice issue. The fact that our waste system is killing us is alarming. You know, Black Americans and those living below the poverty line are more likely to live within 2 miles of petrochemical plants and are dying from pollution-linked cancer and other diseases at disproportionate rates. And the only way out of this is to use less plastic. So it's really time for the state to pass the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. This legislation really is going to be a significant step toward ending the ongoing public subsidy for corporations who take no responsibility for the end cycle of their products. Plastic is a major climate problem. It's a public health crisis. Plastic fabrics are in our food, our water, inside our bodies. You know, it's in the air that we breathe. New York City has seen a major increase in packaging plastics and paper waste, driven especially by an increase in delivery services such as Amazon.
Blair Horner here, representing as the head of NYPERG.
New York State, like much of the rest of the country and the world, is facing a climate crisis and a solid waste crisis. Innovative policies are needed to handle both. This happens to be an area where you've already heard crises overlap. So our hats are off to Senator Harcum, Assemblywoman Glick for advancing these proposals, for the strong support of the City Council by Councilmember Nurse, and all the advocates that you've heard about. There's a lot of, you can always talk about crises, but you ultimately have to do something. And as Judith mentioned, this would be legislation that would set the standard for the country. And if America leads, the world will follow. Critically important that this legislation be taken up and moved.
This has been Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, Hudson, Catskill.
Wayfarm respectfully and